Welcome to Legal News and Review, recipient of the Florida Bar Award of Excellence, and featuring Michael Santucci, co-chair of the Intellectual Property Division of the Broward Bar. From the law firm of Santucci Priori, practicing intellectual property, business, and entertainment law and litigation, located in downtown Fort Lauderdale. Legal News and Review, the only real problem solver radio program using the law, with your moderator, Philip Bell, and hosts and legal panel attorney, Gary Singer, chair of the Broward County Bar Association's Real Property Section. Gary Singer is board certified in real estate law and a syndicated columnist from the Sun Sentinel. He is an expert in his field of practice. Now, here's your moderator, Philip Bell.
On the docket for today's broadcast, Florida probate, estate, and inheritance law has some unique benefits. As one example, no inheritance tax in Florida, unlike New York. Addressing wills, trusts, and estates is Brian O'Connell, who is actually board certified in Florida with wills, trusts, and estates since 1990 and is an expert in litigation involving estate, trust, and guardianship matters for both fiduciaries and beneficiaries. Brian is from the firm of Sicklin, Lubitz, and O'Connell. Did I do that right?
Got it.
All right. I'd like to also introduce our legal panel host, Mike Santucci. Good evening, Mike.
How are you, Phil? I love how you pronounce fiduciaries. It sounds delicious.
Well, they don't know we're doing shots.
Yes.
You know,
wait till you're at the end of the program. Very Italian-American.
There you go.
Yes.
But also our other legal panel host who was here last week is actually at Disney World with his son celebrating his birthday. But he'll be back next week full guns, Mike.
All right, Gary.
As well.
Hope you're listening, Gary, somehow. Online?
Yes. Online. There's
you
multiple
can hear
ways.
Our show online, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Not only online, but on TuneIn, iRadio, and, of course, the almighty iHeart, over 60 million subscribers. Get emails all around the country. You know, New Year's resolution for me was one of the things I wanted to do was to update my will. But the best intentions, you know, Mike, life happens, and things are put off. And on that theme, I'm very pleased to have Brian O'Connell, who, again, is an expert in estate matters. Good evening.
Good evening.
You know, that is so true. You know, I put things off. I'm a procrastinator like anyone else. And one of the last things I want to think about is my will, trust, or estate matters. Heck, I don't even want to show up at my own funeral, you know?
Let me know how that works.
I will. You'll be invited.
Phil, that was one of my New Year's resolutions as well. I was going to try to do it between, you know, the break between Christmas and New Year's.
Well, the thing is, a friend of mine had his ex-wife as his health surrogate, mm-hmm. and it was bitter divorce. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, she would pull the plug on him, you know, immediately.
Well, can you name for that purpose? Jump right in, Brian.
Yeah, go ahead.
Can you name multiple healthcare surrogates where it's more than one person?
Well, you can, but you get in, Michael, to a committee sort of concept. Mm-hmm. If you start naming more than one person, of course, two, you can have a deadlock situation. Three, small committee. And in terms of contacting people, having everyone informed, it gets a little unwieldy. Mm-hmm. So it's not impossible, but that's really our purpose, is to try to guide the client to make that proper selection, to consider their personal facts and circumstances, because everyone is different. Everyone has a different fact pattern, different family background, different needs. So not impossible, mm-hmm. but take some consideration.
All right. But you would recommend one, and then that person can go to whoever they want for guidance.
Absolutely. And the key to most estate planning documents, including a healthcare surrogate, is you name a person or persons, and then you always have backups. You always want to have alternatives. Because if one person can't serve due to illness, they've moved away, they passed away, you want to have a lineup. Because you can have the greatest estate plan in the world, and you've named everyone that's appropriate, but all of a sudden you realize if the person or persons can't serve, well, you have a nice piece of paper.
Most people, and you know, I know the answer to this question, but most people who call me, and I don't do that sort of thing, but they call when they're sick to do a will or you know, an advance directive or to appoint a healthcare surrogate. Like I said, I know the answer to this question, but is it ever too soon to put these documents together and go see an estate planning attorney like yourself?
It's not. And my pitch there would be, unless you have an audience of fortune tellers and palm readers, no one knows truly what's going to happen or occur in their life. So once you're an adult, even if it's just a simple will, a health care surrogate designation, a power of attorney, and a living will, if that's appropriate in that person's belief system, you really, if you start there, that's what we advocate to clients. Start as early as possible, because these are documents that can be amended. And as your circumstances change, your finances change, they grow with you. Mm-hmm. So it's good to start early.
Sure.
As opposed to, like you say, putting it off till there's a situation when perhaps you're not capable of exercising the discretion to make these decisions mm-hmm. and create these documents.
For our non-attorney listeners there, can you walk us through what each one of those, the purpose, just in general, what each one of those documents are that you just mentioned?
Sure. That's a good question.
Yeah, a will, Michael, would be to take assets that are in your name, not joint names and not in three different names, what have you, but your name alone, and at your death, pass them on to the beneficiaries that you have designated after expenses, taxes, et cetera, have been paid. That's the essence of what a will does. And you designate a personal representative to fulfill those obligations, to make the decisions, what to sell, what to pay in the way of expenses and when, and distributions. Then a power of attorney, because it is very different than a will, because a will is only operative after death. Mm. A power of attorney is only operative during someone's lifetime. And that, a power of attorney, is a financial document that says, I can manage this asset, these assets. They can be very broad and include a whole host of powers, or they can be very narrow and only deal with making certain decisions about somebody's property. Then we would come to what I'll call a healthcare surrogate, or a healthcare power of attorney, or a healthcare proxy. Attorneys, of course, love to give all these documents a little different names. And in that, again, during lifetime only, as to if you cannot make a healthcare decision for yourself, then you designate someone to make that decision for you. And as we talked about earlier, mm-hmm. a series of people. So if one person can't do it, the next one steps in to do it. And that's how that functions. And the last thing is a living will. Not to be confused with a living trust. That's a totally different animal. Mm-hmm. But a living will is there to say, if that is your philosophy, if that's your belief, I don't want my life artificially prolonged if I have a terminal illness that's been certified by two physicians. So that would be our building blocks. That's sort of our basic estate plan and estate documents that virtually every client should have, and every listener should have.
You can get very detailed also about what, in your view, is terminal and what is not, and how much detail and direction can you give?
Well, and that's the good part about doing this process, is that you can be as detailed as you want in terms of, well, in these situations,
do this,
don't do this.
Yes, gotcha.
Withhold food and water, provide food and water. Don't resuscitate me, which is a whole totally separate document, but you can customize it. And that's what we see as our really obligation to clients, is to say, let's hear your story. Let's get your background. Let's decide what fits for you, and then put together that document that's not a one-size-fits-all. It's customized for you, and as broad or narrow as you want to have it.
Well, I want to be clear to our audience in this day and age of medicine. Doctors are under the impression of what they consider quality of life. And they'll want to talk your loved ones into not putting the feeding tube, as an example. And that's a real example within my own personal life with my late mother, which she wanted everything to be done. She wasn't done annoying us. Or she said driving us crazy as well. But interestingly enough, before I came in, I saw my neighbor. We live in Boca in the condo in downtown. And he's moderately successful. He's a young guy. He's 32. And they have two kids. And I was telling him, we're going to be talking about wills, trusts, and estates. He says, I'm too young for that. And he says, I don't have anything of great wealth. I said, really? I said, what about your kids? What happens to your kids if something happened to you and God forbid, you and your wife? And he got real quiet. He says, you know, we talked with my brother. We talked with his frat brother friend as well. And, you know, but they had nothing in writing who the kids would go with, or any direction to the kids, whether it's life insurance or anything like that. He just wasn't thinking. So the myth is, I don't have enough money to worry about my estate. I don't have anything really of great value. That's the myth. in all reality, you probably do. You're looking at it, especially across the dinner table.
No, absolutely. I agree with you 100%. And with regard to so-called younger individuals, because we're all young at heart, I think, that are involved right now. But you do need to take a step back to say, regardless what your assets are, the document we were talking about for healthcare, the living will, those are things, it doesn't matter how much money you do or don't have. Those are items you can take control of. You can designate what should happen. You can designate who has the authority to make those decisions, because frankly, a 30-year-old has more of a chance probably of being disabled than dying. So that's where you need those documents. And of course, perfectly stated by you with regard to when there's children involved, absolutely, we see big problems where there are not designations that are made. There are statutes that somewhat kick in, but when you're a parent or parents, please, you know, for your children's sake, have some list of who should take care of their person and their property. It can be the same person, but at least list that so there's a guidepost so somebody isn't fighting, frankly, over that at terrible moments.
Well, on a side note, I was talking to my fiance. We were watching Anderson Cooper. Anderson Cooper is the son of Gloria Vanderbilt. And you know the story about the Vanderbilts, because they didn't designate who she will be looked after by. Well, you know, you're talking about tremendous money back then as well, but they still didn't designate, you know, who will be the guardian.
Yeah, and what happens there, and it is tragic when people haven't taken these simple steps, frankly, because there's fighting, families, you don't like to see that. There's money that gets expended, and you don't like to see that. And it's so simple when you're putting these documents together, for example, in a power of attorney, we commonly will put what we call a pre-need guardian designation, which will ask the client, if you can't take care of your person, if you can't take care of your property, who should do that? That goes into the document. That's binding under Florida law, unless it can be shown that that person is not qualified. They're presumed to be qualified to fulfill those roles. But if you've done that complete estate plan, you've probably designated and you have people available that can fulfill all those roles, so you shouldn't need a guardian if you've done it right.
These are heavy decisions.
Yeah.
And it amazes me how many people take this cavalier attitude. Like, every lawyer's gotten a call from a friend and saying, you know what, I just want to say something. You have a form for this? You have a form for that? Can I just go on Google a form for that? Can I just go on
LegalZoom?
Please, how many problems I've solved that have come from forms like that. But you use the phrase, these are customized for you. You know, not only when you're grabbing something off the internet is it not necessarily going to be for your situation. You know, you're saving money on who's going to take care of you when you're in a situation like that. You're saving money on who's going to take care of your kids, God forbid something should happen, or your assets. You're going to save money on that by going to Googling something. And I mean, and here's just another example. I'm hoping you can confirm this because this is your area. What about when there's changes in the law? One of the documents you mentioned is a power of attorney, or I believe a durable power of attorney. And at least recently in my career, there's been a change in the Florida law where what happens to the old forms that are on some website from before the change in the law?
Yeah, we have problems with forms. Let's start with that in general.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, Quicken Lawyer may be my best ally when it comes to our litigation practice.
So you do that as well?
We do quite a bit of
documents done by someone else.
Exactly. Exactly. I call it cross-training because if you know how to put them together, you know how to litigate them, that sharpens you up on both ends.
Sure.
But with regard to forms being stale and so forth, yes, we have statutory changes, and the power of attorney was a big one several years ago. But there's often, and in the statute, and if it was executed even prior to this act that we have now for powers of attorney, it's still valid. Mm-hmm. It's just you don't have all the bells and whistles that are available. And one of the big changes, which I know throws people off, is that if you used to have a form that said, well, if I'm incapacitated and determined by this doctor, then this comes into effect, well, that's gone. If you do a power of attorney today, it's in effect today, right now. So there's no springing that used to be the term that was used for it. But really with regard to forms, you well stated it. If you're going to spend a few hundred dollars as opposed to put your family in a scenario where they're spending thousands of dollars in turmoil and litigation. The cost-benefit analysis is easy.
I mean, our listeners can't see Brian, but you know, I'd have a warm fuzzy coming into your office talking about such heavy, you know, important decisions like this, you know, by somebody who does, you know, nothing but this. So,
well, you understand the gravity of what you're doing, because once I'm 6 feet under, I can't change a damn thing.
No, sir.
You know, and you've been involved in litigation involving estates, trusts, guardianship matters for both fiduciaries and beneficiaries. And we always hear in the news some of the larger estates, $20 million, $50 million, that it goes to a health care giver, you know? And that's called, typically, it looks to me, as undue influence.
That's right, Phil. And what you have in South Florida, unfortunately, is sort of an epidemic of undue influence cases, where individuals could be a family member, a neighbor, or a caregiver, mm-hmm. who discover that so-and-so has a steady amount of money or a cash flow that's good, and they ingratiate themselves to them. And then it's usually a creeping sort of situation, meaning inch by inch, maybe they get some gifts, maybe they get added to a bank account, maybe they get added as a beneficiary to a document. So usually it doesn't happen
right
overnight.
Away. Yeah.
But it's such a problem, especially with vulnerable elderly
people. Sounds
people.
Predatorial to me.
It does. And we do have... There's some statutes to deal with that. If there are certain fact patterns that occur, there can be a presumption of undue influence. So actually, let's use our caregiver analogy here. That caregiver would have to disprove the existence of undue influence, which is important in the law. Who has the burden of proof, meaning who has to go forward, prove their case in a civil case 51% to 49%. So that was a public policy that led to a statute that we use a lot in litigation practice when we're dealing with those undue influence situations.
Now, state tax has changed, and you corrected me, my friend. I said it's $5 million. He said, no, it's 5.49. Is that correct?
That's right, but who's counting?
Who's
But that's the 2017 exemption amount, and the point I'd like to stress to listeners there is that all of us have start that exemption off in mm-hmm. gift tax and estate tax terms. And if you're married, you multiply it by two, so that if you do effective planning during your lifetime, you can have the benefit of sheltering a substantial amount of assets if you're at that level of wealth.
Well, money tears people apart. It changes people. When one sibling is left more than the other, because maybe there was greater need. You know, maybe one is very successful and doesn't need the wealth behind them as well. But that doesn't mean they're upset that mom and dad did more for them than they did for me. I'm being penalized because I'm successful. I'm sure you've run across that in your practice.
No, it's pretty constant. And my little inside story on that is I have to tell people it isn't Europe. We don't have sort of descendants of wealth mapped out in ancient laws and so forth. That fortunately in the U.S. and in Florida that you can designate your beneficiaries unless say there's an undue influence situation, unless you're found to lack mental capacity or unless your document wasn't executed properly. Those are the grounds for really contesting wills, trust. But otherwise, you have a favorite pet cat. That cat could be your beneficiary if you had 10 children. Again, if you have that requisite mental capacity, free of the undue influence, and your documents
are done right. Yeah, that sounds crazy to me.
We have pet trusts that we create for folks that
I've
are very,
that
very interested
yes.
in their animals. Mm-hmm. But charities, any designations like that, it doesn't have to be restricted to family members. And as you said it, there's no proportions that one has to follow. But we do stress to people, do these documents, name the beneficiaries you want, or else the state of Florida is going to have a will that you probably don't want, because it's going to outline, if you die what's called intestate, without a will, without a trust, it's going to say, and it goes to these individuals that may not be the people you want to receive that, or you may not want to receive it all at once as well.
Well, Mike, being an entertainment and intellectual property law attorney, those patents and music rights, copyrights, they have tremendous value. And if one of your clients passes away that has that, what happens to that?
Yeah, sure. They're assets like anything else. And just to segue into what you were just talking about, yeah. I'm handling a case right now. I'm not going to mention who the musical artist is, but it involves the musical artist's cat. And that's a candidate for a pet trust, certainly. But back to what you're asking, intellectual property is an asset like anything else, like any other property. It can be bought and sold. And, that's something that I would imagine that Brian would see on a list of assets that, would have to be handled by personal representative, to pass on to the proper people. So.
Absolutely. And intellectual property.
Yeah.
And it certainly is something that's subject to disposition, as Michael indicates. But that's why you want to have that document. You want to have that person named as a personal representative, named as a trustee that can deal with those types of assets, that they have the qualifications to know how to handle those, or hire someone like Michael to help them with that.
Well, there's a specific, that's where I would work together with an attorney like you, or if it's in a dissolution of marriage situation, maybe with a family lawyer, but more so when it's someone who passes away, identifying the intellectual property is sometimes difficult. You may not know that, your father just passed away. You may know 10 of his songs that are earning income, but you might not know about the other 4, and they might be signed to a different publishing company, and they don't know where to send the check now. And, we work together on teams like this, and you're certainly someone who's a specialist and focuses in this area. And
you work at more also the complex as well, if you will.
Absolutely. Now that's what makes me get up in the morning.
Yeah,
and want to do what I do. And,
let me ask you this. And I asked you this question leading up to the broadcast. What if I lose my will and all I have is a photocopy? Is that good enough?
No, that is a problem, and I can give you a real life story on that. We had an individual lady had $10 million she had accumulated.
Oh, that's my aunt.
I wish she was my aunt. And she had a will, several wills over a number of years to charities. And one was a church that she regularly attended up almost until the time of her death, but the original was lost. And in Florida, if the original is lost and it's last in the possession of the person who's done that will, there's a presumption that that person intentionally revoked it, destroyed it.
Wow.
So we had to overcome that presumption in order to save that inheritance. And it's difficult because, of course, when people lose things, usually someone isn't around watching it.
Yeah.
So you have to prove it another way with circumstantial evidence, but that's why we stress, and that's what we keep when we do an original will for someone. We at least ask them, can we keep it, and give them a receipt. And my track record is good. Knocking on the table in the
studio. It actually goes into a safe?
Yes.
Wow.
It does. Because we don't have that instance happen.
Is that a free service from your firm?
It is. Yeah, that's just part of that estate planning practice.
I like that a lot. You know, there's so many issues here and so many myths when it comes to, but Florida is a great place to live and apparently a great place to die. There's no estate taxes. And I understand that New York could be very dogmatic to those who have not made the change that live down here permanently as well. I wish we had more time. And Brian O'Connell, you come up right on Google. When I did Wills Trust Estates and then I did O'Connell Wills Trust of the States, both of them in West Palm Beach, you came right up, even without your name, as is on the front page. What is the best way for our audience to get in touch with you?
Phone 561-832-5900, and then email, and this is where the names get a little difficult, but it's boconnell@ciklin, with a C.
C-I, yeah.
Yes. C-I-K-L-I-N, Lubitz, L-U-B-I-T-Z .com. That would be the alternate form, but we welcome phone calls. We enjoy talking to new and prospective clients and seeing if we can assist them with their needs.
Absolutely. And you take the time. You're a lawyer's lawyer, and I mean that, board certified. You are an expert, sir, and it's appreciated that you came in to educate our audience. And again, we only touch the surface as well. And, Brian O'Connell from Ciklin, Lubitz, and O'Connell. You got your name up there. You are a partner in the firm, and it's a good firm, good-sized firm as well. And Mike, why don't you take us off?
Thanks for listening, everybody. Hopefully you're here. You're listening every day now. We're on every day. And I want to give a special thanks to one of our producers, Giovanni Lopez,
yay,
who is now back in town.
Yep.
So that it's great to see him. And thank you to our guest, Brian
Actually,
O'Connell.
Giovanni thank has
you.
A new title.
Yes.
He's administrative executive producer for all the broadcasts.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Well, it was either that or I had to give him a raise.
Yes. Well, thanks especially to our guest, Brian O'Connell. And remember, everyone,
be legal.
You've been listening to the award-winning Legal News and Review, recognized by the Florida Bar's Award of Excellence. Legal News and Review, featuring Michael Santucci from the law firm of Santucci Priori, located in downtown Fort Lauderdale, and practicing intellectual property, business, and entertainment law and litigation. They can be reached at 500law.com or at 954-351-7474. To contact the legal panel hosts and guests, go to belegalbuzz.com. And to reach Gary Singer, board-certified real estate and syndicated columnist, appearing in 400 media outlets, including the front page of the Money Section every Monday in the Sun Sentinel, from the law firm of Gary M. Singer, PA, call 954-851-1448. Join us next Friday, 6 to 7 p.m., for Legal News and Review. Remember, be legal.
Do you need an attorney? Call someone you can trust. The Broward County Bar Association, a not-for-profit organization, was founded in 1925 to foster courtesy, ethics, and professionalism, as well as to provide necessary legal services throughout South Florida. The Broward County Bar Association, 3,000 members strong, has attorney members that work throughout the entire state of Florida, as well as nationally and internationally. Remember, the Broward County Bar Association is a referral you can count on. Call the Broward County Bar Association at 954-764-8310 for all your legal needs. A referral you can count on. 954-764-8310 or contact online at browardbar.org. Non-lawyer spokesperson.